weapons only.
Oh. Well, it's a good thing you clapped at the beginning, because I'll take that and leave now. I'm going to be talking about some people who followed God through really difficult times. We're going to be looking at Noah and Joseph, who faced some really difficult times to do with changing climates. They were having to face floods and droughts and famines, pretty serious stuff. So we'll look at those two guys today and see how that helps us understand what we might be looking forward to in the future with climate change and changing climates. So first of all, thinking about Noah, well, we kind of jump into the Noah story, don't we, when God speaks to him and says, build an ark. Kind of a bit, seems a bit out of the blue, but we also know that Noah really did know God very well, and he was the one person out of all the rest of the humans that God said, I want to save Noah. Everyone else is living pretty bad lives, lots of evil and violence. I want to get rid of everything, but I want to save Noah. And so God speaks to Noah and he saves his family and also all the birds and animals and lots of plants as well. So Noah is a pretty amazing guy. I think he must have had a lot of patience to take on the whole job of building this ark. It took him a whole year to build, which is fair enough. And then also all the looking after all the animals and all of the plants. And he might have come on the ark with one girl rabbit and one boy rabbit, but I bet he left it with a few more. Or maybe that was their food supply, I'm not sure. So it's just amazing to think of the patience he must have had and all the things he must have dealt with. So over to you guys, just sort of shout out if you're happy to. What kind of job description would you be writing if you were writing Noah's job description? What kind of roles did he have?
Conservationist.
Conservationist? Yeah, he must have. I mean, imagine the divisions in the ark he must have put in to keep the tigers away from the whatever that he might have nibbled. So yeah, pretty amazing guy knowing about animals. Anything else? What other roles?
Carpenter.
Carpenter, yeah, he must have been really good at that.
Captain
of a amazingly huge boat.
Yeah. Zookeeper.
Pretty much, yeah. Zookeeper, isn't it? Yeah. So that involves a lot of mucking out. A lot of the dirty end of animal welfare. A bit of a vet as well, maybe.
Patient and able to take criticism.
Criticism from the animals, or?
Criticism from other people while he was building the ark.
Ah, yes.
There's a twit, because there wasn't any water anymore. But what was he doing?
Yeah, so you think of Noah's there building his ark, and people around are going, what's he doing? Why are you building an ark? What is an ark? Not sure whether he lived next to the sea, but it would have been a pretty unusual thing to be doing, to be building a massive great boat and there's no sea to be sailing through. The flood's not come yet. So he's an amazing man of faith as well. He believed God when God asked him to do this apparently crazy thing, and he did it. Any other roles that Noah had?
Management,
yeah. I guess just getting everything ready. It took him a week, like I said, to get, no, a week, no, a year to build the ark, and part of that would have been planning, wouldn't it, of getting all the right food together, thinking how you're going to feed all these different animals. It just is quite amazing, really, amazing story. Yeah, he was taking the plans that God gave him, but then there must have been all the sort of finer details of everything. Yeah,
that's
amazing. Yeah, he's a family man as well. He's got his own wife, his three boys, and I'm reckoning they were grown-up lads at the time, and they had their own families as well, so that was really important to him too. And he didn't ignore those. He didn't say, oh, you stay behind. He was like, no, you come on board as well. So, yeah. Yeah, he's quite a talented guy, really. He sort of developed all those things. I guess also it was very much God gave him the skills to do those things as well. So then finally, God says, right, it's time, you've got to get in the ark. And then they spend a week sitting in the ark, waiting for the flood to begin. And then there's the 40 days of rain, 150 days of the flood waters rising, and then another 150 days of the flood falling. So it's a really long time of not actually knowing when it's going to end, because when they're in the middle of it all, they wouldn't have known when the flood waters were going to recede, if God was going to actually do that, or would this be the end for them, as well as it had been for all the other people they would have known. So, yeah, it's quite a lot of patience in there as well, like keeping everything together, keeping everyone's spirits up, I guess, and keeping the animals apart and looking after them. It's just amazing, really. And then he gets to the part where he's realising the floodwaters are going down, and he sends out a raven, but then it comes back again, because he's sending it out to see, is the land that this bird can find for me, because they might be able to, you know, find some land and bring something back to give proof. But it brings back nothing. So then he tries the dove, and he sends the dove out, but it brings back nothing. And then he sends it out again, and it brings back a bit of leaf. So it shows him, oh, there must be some land somewhere with a tree. Brilliant. And then he sends it out again, and it doesn't come back. So he might have been pretty sad at the dove disappearing, but also he'd used the dove to do the job of finding out if there was land. And then finally they then landed on the mountain and were able to get out. And what did Noah do? Well, he gave thanks to God. He praised him and sacrificed some of his animals, actually, to do that. Because that was their tradition at the time, I guess, of that's how you worship God, is you give something precious, you burn it up, and then give that as thanks to God. And then the great bit is God, you know, he's remembered them, he's taken the flood away, and he gives them this sign of the rainbow. So there's a blessing in Genesis 9 from verse 1, where God blesses Noah and his family, saying, "Be fruitful, increase in number, fill the earth. The fear and dread of you will fall on all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the sky, on every creature that moves along the ground, and all the fish in the sea. They're given into your hands. Everything that lives and moves will be food for you. Just as I gave you the green plants, I now give you everything." And then God went on in verse 12, skipping a bit. Verse 12, "This is the sign of the covenant I'm making between me and you and every living creature with you, a covenant for all generations to come. I've set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. Whenever I bring clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures of every kind. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life." So that is a covenant for us as well, because it was talking about all generations. It's brilliant that God's saying, I'm not going to destroy the whole earth again with a flood. Obviously bad things happen, disasters happen, but you know, God's promise there that when we see his rainbow, we can remember that and thank God that he's not got a major flood planned for everything again. And also that covenant again is about giving Noah and us care and responsibility for all of the earth, all the beasts of the earth, all the birds in the sky, and all the creatures and all the fish. So it's sort of reinforcing the fact that God's created everything, but he's created humans to care for the earth, to care for the animals, the birds, plants, everything. So it's a really amazing blessing, but it's also this covenant, this agreement that God's got with Noah and also with us. So some of you guys have got pets and livestock and think you're doing a great job in actually looking after them. I've kind of steered away from that. I've gone, oh, that takes so much time, so much energy, so much effort, all the vet's bills. Oh no, it's not environmentally sound to have a dog, because do you know they use as much food as it would take to feed, and you can make those kind of arguments, and people have, you know, said that actually a dog is the equivalent of only a Land Rover in terms of carbon dioxide. You know, you can say that and sort of, well, I've kind of gone down that route. I've gone, oh no, can't be bothered. But actually, those of you who do have pets and livestock and things, that's brilliant, because you're getting in there and caring for those animals and looking after them and growing in patience as you do so, I'm sure. And it is a sacrifice to look after the animals in a good way. And there's the whole thing as well about we have a responsibility to care for animals and make sure they're treated well. And there's lots of other things in the Bible about slaughtering animals in a good way, so not torturing them or being unkind, but being kind and looking after them in the right way. My other story there is about Millie, who's a real hedgehog fan, and she's been looking after the hedgehogs in her garden, because it's just near the main road in Chippenham. You wouldn't think, oh, that was a wildlife sanctuary, but actually her garden, she's made sure there's a hedgehog box for the hedgehogs. She's got links with the local rescue centre and looks after them in the winter so that these young hedgehogs aren't dying, which is just brilliant. And I guess that Steve, when he cuts the grass, takes care now to make sure there's no hedgehogs to be mown over. that would be a yes, then. But no, it's great that Millie's putting in that extra care and effort to to look out for what's happening in her garden. Because yeah, it's right in the middle of town. You wouldn't think it, but actually there's animals there that she's looking out for. It's a really good example. Let's now to switch from thinking about Noah and all his amazing animal caring skills to now thinking about Joseph. It's a similar kind of situation in that there was a crisis that was coming to do with, this time, drought, and then of course it would affect people's ability to grow crops and there would be famine. But God warned him, and so it's similar to Noah's story in that God spoke to Joseph and warned him, and then God even gave him a plan as well, this time not building an ark, but all to do with saving up wheat, saving up the food for the bad during the good years to then use them in the bad years. And so it is quite similar to what Noah did. So you guys, you already know, I'm sure, the story of Joseph. What kind of roles did he have? What kind of jobs did he have? So what are you guys thinking about?
Slave.
Yeah, he was a slave for a while.
Yeah.
Administrative
skills.
Administrator, yeah.
Singer.
Oh yeah, well, I don't know, he might have been a bit of a musician. Bit of a prophet. He had his own dreams that he then interpreted as messages from God, and also he was able to interpret other people's dreams as well, yeah.
Advisor,
yeah, he had good advice for people, and he was ready to speak up and acknowledge God as well. He sort of said, you know, I've got this interpretation of a dream, but, you know, God's given that to me. So he was pretty good in that respect. Anything else?
He was in charge of Egypt.
Prime Minister, yeah, of Egypt, yeah. So it goes from slave to top man in Egypt, apart from Pharaoh. Pretty amazing.
He's a shepherd.
Shepherd, well, you would have thought he would be a shepherd. But actually, he let the brothers do that, didn't he? He was the favourite son. I think he just sort of watched. What's that?
That's why they
were questioned. Exactly. He was bullied, wasn't he, by his brothers, and he let them do the work. He did the messages for Dad, you know, brought them the lunch maybe. And yeah, he saw what was going on, but he wasn't really close to the land. He let his brothers do that, I think.
He seemed to be the one that the father actually educated, because he spent time with his father, and you get the impression that there was a real training that was going on behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, so he seemed to be an educated guy, able to quickly learn and manage and do things like writing, which not everyone would do at the time. He seems to be that kind of guy. If he then becoming Prime Minister, organising all the accounts, I can imagine him being there, a bit like, you know, a government official today, busy sort of organising all the carbon accounting, or, you know, actually the finances of the country, working out how much we need to grow of that crop to make sure we can save it for the bad times, that kind of thing. So, yeah, pretty good with his calculator, or whatever they had in Egypt at the time. Maybe there was a whole loads of scribes around him sort of telling him, oh, this area's grown that much, this area's grown that much, that kind of person is what I can imagine. Yeah.
A bit of a diplomat as well, deal with all the areas of Egypt and all their rulers and governors and
Yeah, because the great thing is his plan of saving up all the crops for the bad years, it worked as well. He had it so much that they were able to sell it to other nations. So yeah, quite a skilled administrator working out how much they needed. Yeah. Going back to that dream that the Pharaoh had, it was all about, it's quite a crazy dream, but God's like that, isn't he? He sort of uses amazing dreams that people have, but it had this meaning. So the dream was the 7 fat cows eat 7 skinny cows. Ooh, weird dream. The next dream was 7 fat ears of wheat, so, you know, the bits on a wheat head. Those 7 fat ones ate 7 skinny ones. And so, no, yeah, no, the other way around. So the 7 skinny ones eat the 7 fat ones. Yeah, that way around. And it's like a bizarre dream. So Pharaoh's not understanding, none of his wise men of the time, dream interpreters, were understanding. And so suddenly someone remembers Joseph and says, Joseph, he's the guy, he interprets dreams, he helped me before, and so bring him in. And so Joseph is pulled out of prison, quickly shaved and cleaned up, and presented to Pharaoh. And amazingly, God gives him the interpretation of the dream. And Joseph also acknowledges God as well. He tells everyone that, yeah, God has given me this interpretation. What it means is there's going to be 7 great years, there's going to be 7 drought years. And there's a plan. The plan is we're going to save up the wheat and all the food, and then we'll use it in the bad years. So it's pretty amazing stuff, and God helped Joseph there, because he then got promoted to top position, but he also helped the whole nation of Egypt, save them from this famine, and so many other nations, because later on other people came down to buy food from the Egyptians, and that included Joseph's family. They came down to Egypt to buy grain, and then Joseph tricks them into... there's loads of detail into all that. Joseph tricks them basically into bringing his father down, because he wants to see his dad, and so he gets them to bring his father down so that then he'll sell them more grain. And even better than that, Pharaoh is really excited to meet the family, and then provides for them with a portion of land in Egypt so that they can be shepherds and not be interfered with by Pharaoh, because Pharaoh's a bit like that, I guess. Doesn't want to meet these different people. Happy to have Joseph, but no, we'll set aside your family over there. And it's really good, because Joseph then goes on to acknowledge God and say, yeah, God's made this happen. I went through all that suffering so that you can now be blessed and you can now be looked after. There's some odd things in there too, though. There's things like the fact that Joseph ended up enslaving the whole of Egypt. So all the Egyptians became slaves, apart from the priests, because they would all... they basically ran out of money. They ran out of money to buy the grain back from Joseph. So rather than distributing it freely, as you know, the Christian teaching might be, well, you gather it up and then you give it away. No, he actually sold it back to the people. They ran out of money, so they sold their animals to buy the money, to buy the food. They ran out of animals, so they then had to sell themselves as slaves. They had to sell their land to Pharaoh. And so there's a kind of dark side there, that Joseph has set up this system of the whole country being slaves to Pharaoh, and that then continued on, that the people would always be giving part of their harvest to Pharaoh. But hey, God still saved people through that. And I think also Joseph was at quite a distance from the land. He was very much, like we said earlier, an administrator, sort of looking at things from the top down, planning where things went. He wasn't like hands on the ground getting dirty. Because he could have come up with a different system. He could have told each family to save enough. But no, he centralised it all. He got everyone to bring it into the cities. So he was very at a distance from the land, but he was using that brilliant plan that God had provided for him, that meant that the people of Egypt and his family were saved. Joseph is also thought of as being a bit like Jesus, because he'd suffered and Jesus suffered. Yet he saved his family, and Jesus saved, well, the whole world. Also, Joseph was betrayed by his brothers. They sold him as a slave earlier on. And so that's a bit like Jesus was betrayed by his brother Judas, you know, his fellow disciple Judas. And also, Jesus acknowledges God's glory, not just look at me, I'm great. Jesus acknowledges his father, and Joseph did that. He acknowledged his father God as helping him. So, yeah, these men, Noah and Joseph, can really help us as we understand their stories and the way they responded to changing climates, as we now look at how we respond to potential changing climates in the future. I've got a clip now to show you to just remind you of the situation that we might be facing in the next few years.
I'm on this because you know it well, that sun's radiation comes.
Sorry, hang on.
Then, in the form of light waves, and that heats up the Earth, and then some of the radiation that is absorbed and warms the Earth is re-radiated back into space in the form of infrared radiation. And some of the outgoing infrared radiation is trapped by this layer of atmosphere and held inside the atmosphere. And that's a good thing, because it keeps the temperature of the Earth within certain boundaries, keeps it relatively constant and livable. But the problem is, this thin layer of atmosphere is being thickened by all of the global warming pollution that's being put up there. And what that does is it thickens this layer of atmosphere. More of the outgoing infrared is trapped. And so the atmosphere heats up worldwide. That's global warming. Now, that's the traditional explanation. Here's a, what I think is a better explanation.
Global warming, or not like you're probably wondering why your ice cream went away. Well, Susie, the culprit isn't foreigners, it's global warming. Yeah. Meet Mr. Sunbeam. He comes all the way from the sun to visit Earth.
Hello, Earth. Just popping in to brighten your day. La 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 la. And now.
Sorry.
It's just frozen up. Oh, should we go on? Oh no, so we've got a glitch there, but the light-hearted view is the sunbeam comes in and heats up the earth, etc, etc. You know how it goes. The end bit of that cartoon is then the response of the government at the time is to put giant ice cubes into the ocean to cool down the earth. Yeah. But won't we run out of ice cubes, asked the little girl. No. Anyway, so there's people come up with responses to how we deal with climate change, and that's a bit like Joseph was there doing the sort of technical response, we gather up all the wheat, whereas Noah just got in there and looked after all the animals, gathered them all together and saved them all. Fantastic. So when we think about how climates might change... That's okay. When we think about how climates might change looking ahead, you know, we can take some advice from Noah, some from Joseph. So from the sort of Noah point of view, some people are thinking, well, maybe we've got to build an ark again. You know, we save species. We cut off areas of nature reserves to look after those species and those animals. Or do we actually make ourselves an ark and go out into space, find the next place where we can live? Or do we manage our way through like Joseph? Do we... Look after the people in a very centralised way. You know, the governments will take care of it. They will gather up all the things we need in the good years so that we can then use them in the bad years. So there's things that we can take from those stories to then think about climate change. Let's just click on. For us, actually facing climate change, we do need to be thinking about the things that we want to leave behind, the things that our ancestors have done, the way that society is run. Does that need to change? And do we need to say sorry for the things that have gone before? We've got a history in the UK of going out into the rest of the world, colonising countries, taking resources, turning those natural resources into money, filling up the bank accounts so everything's fine at home. But is it fine out in the rest of the world? Obviously, that, you know, that's changed now. There's not so much British Empire left. But there is still that attitude of it's okay to go out. There will always be another frontier. There will always be, you know, more resources over the next hill that you can then use, turn into money, and that's fine. That money saves it up for the next time. But actually, once some coal has been burnt to make electricity, well, that coal's gone. And we can't use it again. Future generations can't use it again. And so we actually need to say sorry for some of those attitudes and ask God to show us, well, what's the right attitude to his creation? How can we care for it? Going back to that agreement that Noah and God had. You know, how can we care for the creation? How can we be responsible for it? So how does that strike you guys? I've got a prayer here that we could read that's a saying sorry prayer. Is that where you're at? Or is there a lot more thinking that you guys need to do in terms of thinking... You know, we need to say sorry for what we've done. We need to say sorry for what our ancestors have done. I'm thinking that, you know, we're not quite there yet. There's some thinking to be done on that. But could you just take a moment, just bow your heads, and I'll read. God of creation, you've entrusted us with this earth, and it's a gift to be used responsibly. Yeah, we and our ancestors... have used the earth for our own selfish gain. We don't use things properly, and we don't often restore things. We simply replace things. Father, we ask for forgiveness for us and for our ancestors. Amen. Okay. And there's I think a lot more thinking there to be done about, you know, what does that mean? What are our attitudes? What are the structural sins? The sins that are just in our society. Things are done the way they are because they have always been done that way and they will always be done that way. No, that's a lie. That's not true. Things can be set up so that we respect what God has made, so that we use it in the right way, and so that we honour God in that. Also, when we're thinking about climate change and disasters that are happening, it's so important to be thinking about the poor and how they're affected. Because when you've not got much, it's really hard. If bad times come, it's even harder. And I think we'd be thinking about what would Dayspring do if a flood hit, or if a drought hit Wiltshire and started to affect people. You know, if the homes near the river in Chippenham are flooded, can we help? Well, we might not be too worried about that here, but around the world, people are being affected by that. One of the churches in Louisiana, USA, was one of many churches to help when Hurricane Katrina hit in 2005. And the church is called the Healing Place Church. Healing Place Church is a place that's ready to serve. It's a place that's ready to heal. And they serve with no strings attached. They're just ready to help families who've been hurt by hurricanes that come, because they come quite often, but also just day-to-day things that affect families. They've got a great reputation for that. It goes back to the millennium bug. You know, back in 1999, people were concerned about, you might not remember this, Megan, but people were concerned about computers getting confused at the year 2000 coming up. And what if businesses went down? What if life support machines went down? What if our, you know, food distribution systems can't cope? Those kind of things. And so that church, Healing Place Church at the time, got together and worked out some emergency plans, what they might do. As it happened, it was a big New Year's party and everything was fine. There wasn't that problem. But it meant that they were then ready to help when later on hurricanes came along, and also the 9/11 disaster. And they were able to send teams up to help serve the people, like the emergency services, with food, counselling and those kind of supports. So that's a church that's really highly geared up to serving and to helping those who are faced by disasters like floods and droughts and hurricanes. We've probably got a lot of thinking to do on that as to how we would help people, but I would hope that we have got that attitude of being ready to serve all the time. We've also got this saying in Dayspring about Noah. We think about how he's building the structures for conditions that do not yet exist. So as he was there building that ark, he was building an ark, yet there wasn't any water. And it's an odd one. People would have been going, what are you doing? Why are you building an ark? But he was a man of faith. He listened to God. He heard what God had to say, and he followed that. And sometimes when we're thinking about church building and planning for future things that haven't happened yet, we've got to remember that we're building structures for conditions that do not yet exist. So we're putting in place structures to have a much bigger church impact on Wiltshire. When we're thinking about church planting, let's be thinking big. Let's not, obviously we need to be following what God is saying, but we need to be thinking bigger. What if a lot more people were turning to Jesus? What structures would need to be in place for those conditions that do not yet exist? And it's the same when thinking about climate change. Are you using resources in a way that is caring for them and taking the time to use things wisely now, even though actually you might be well off, you might be rich, you might be able to afford to use things in a very wasteful way? Do you use them wisely now? The buzzword that I like at the moment is pre-cycling. So everyone knows about recycling. You just take your can and you recycle it. But pre-cycling is where you're really sensible, a bit like my mum and dad used to be. They'd always take the thermos of tea with them when it was on a journey up the motorway. Okay, motorway, not train, but you know, it'd be taking the thermos of tea and making sure you use that with a little bit of milk, rather than going and buying a throwaway cup. So that's pre-cycling, is basically being sensible and thinking about what you're using and using it wisely, because everything you make, does it end up in landfill? Does it end up burnt? Does it end up thrown away? And then that denies somebody in the future, you know, using that tree to chop down and make paper or whatever it might be. So we have so many choices about how we do life, choices about how we interact with creation, about what we use. And we need to be asking the God of Noah and Joseph how to go about life. And I think it's also really interesting how many different roles both those men have. There was the family man, the builder, the zookeeper, the vet, the breeder, the sailor, the captain. You know, Noah was a man of many talents. But it wasn't all at once. I'm sure that happened gradually over time. And also with Joseph as well, over his life, he was the favourite son, the bullied brother, the slave, he was abused, he was the prisoner, he was the manager, prime minister, so many different things. And so I think for us as well, we need to think about what different roles have we had, what different roles might God have for us, and really be asking God, what do you need to leave behind, what roles might God want you to step into next, without being overwhelmed by, oh, there might be something a long way off. It's okay, it's just what's the next step. So be thinking about what the next step is. Okay, so I'll leave it there. Thanks very much for listening.
Thanks. Thank you.